Science Podcast for Tuesday.
USGS, Oregon Science Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Oregon Science Podcast. I'm Damon Runberg. Today we will hear an interview recorded last month with USGS Forest and Rangeland Ecosystem Science Center research ecologist Steve Koenig. I traveled to Boise, Idaho to visit Steve at the Snake River Field Station. Steve joined me to speak about his current research on sage birds, including the greater sage grouse, and the changing sagebrush ecosystems of the western United States. Thanks for joining us today, Steve.
You're welcome.
So, can you tell us just a little bit about what the sagebrush ecosystem is?
The sagebrush ecosystem is a shrubland that is one of the largest systems in western North America, and its dominant plant species is sagebrush. And so what people see as they drive across miles and miles of these flat open spaces in the western United States is sagebrush shrublands, and it looks very boring to them because they usually drive through in the middle of the day and the sun is overhead and all they see is this kind of a drab olive green plant that's no higher than 2 or 3 feet, just extending for miles and miles.
So how large is this ecosystem, and kind of what area does it encompass in the U.S.?
It's primarily distributed through the western part of North America. The Great Plains are primarily grassland, and then as you start moving west, you kind of grade into a mixed grassland shrubland community. And then, of course, you have the Rocky Mountains where the higher elevations are forested. But again, these lowland valleys and basins throughout the western North America are covered by sagebrush, or at one time were dominated by sagebrush communities.
So you had said earlier that to the casual viewer when you're driving through these sagebrush ecosystems that they just seem bland and desolate, but what is it that's so fascinating about these ecosystems?
They have, compared to forests and other kinds of plant communities, relatively few number of species. They're simple systems. But the dynamics in these systems are so incredibly complex and often play out over centuries. And trying to unravel how these systems function, how the birds interact in these systems, how the plants dictate future dynamics of the communities, and how to manage these systems is an incredible challenge. It's not like you go out and you do a simple treatment and you can expect something to happen the direction that you want it to. It's not an orderly progression of plant communities in a succession the way a forester might think of it. There's any number of endpoints for these communities, and trying to understand how these communities are going to respond to different things like land use or treatments is so challenging that we really haven't figured out how to do it yet.
So recently, that seems like there's been greater attention directed towards the loss of sagebrush habitat. Is this happening, and what are the causes of this loss?
Yeah, sagebrush as a habitat is one of the most imperiled habitats in western North America, and largely because of many expanses of sagebrush, large areas have been either lost completely or fragmented or converted to a different kind of dominant habitat type. The primary causes for the loss of sagebrush are invasive plant species. Cheatgrass is the one that's most common. And then that in combination with fire starts this really nasty cycle of burning off sagebrush, and then the cheatgrass will come in and replace what was there in the sagebrush. The cheatgrass has a different characteristic from the native grasses in that it promotes fire much more frequently and much larger fires, so the sagebrush never gets a chance to recover.
So what does this loss of habitat in the sagebrush ecosystems mean for biodiversity? Specifically, do plants and animals in this ecosystem, are they affected by the loss of sagebrush habitat?
Yes, and particularly birds. Birds that depend on sagebrush, as well as birds who live in grassland habitats in these general shrubland communities, are experiencing some of the most rapid declines of any group of birds in North America, largely because of this loss of habitat.
So looking into the future of research needs for shrubland or sagebrush ecosystems, what are some of the research areas that scientists need to be focusing on in the future to help land managers with this loss of habitat?
One of the basic questions is just simple biology. What is it that sage grouse require or that brewer sparrows require in terms of amount of habitat that they need? And we really don't have, despite all the years of studying, we really don't have a good handle on some of these things because we're learning that the quality of the habitat, that is how much sagebrush is actually there in a given area, is just as important as the size of that habitat patch that you have. And it's not just a matter of managing for an area that's a single size, but the landscape within which that area is embedded. And so that you can take, for instance, a square mile of sagebrush. And if that square mile is in the middle of a total agricultural landscape and it's totally an hospital area around that square mile, that's not going to be nearly as attractive as if it were in a larger mosaic of shrubland systems. So we often tend to think too small in terms of looking at what birds require and focus on, say, an immediate home range. But really, the reason that bird is there to begin with is because of the much larger context that allows it to put its home range in that place.
What is the range of a lot of these shrubland birds?
Well, an individual home range might be about the size of an acre. For some of the smaller birds, the sparrows, the brewer sparrow or sage sparrow, and sage thrashers, which are a little bit larger bird, about the size of a robin, would use an area maybe 2 or 3 acres in size. The real challenging bird is sage grouse, which will expand over an area over their annual range of a little over 2,500 square kilometers. And I know you're going to ask me to convert that into square miles, but I'm geographically challenged. So
it's pretty large, though?
It's an area larger than Rhode Island, let's put it that way.
Okay.
And that's where the real challenge comes in, because you're trying to manage habitat over that large an area, and you have such a variety of conditions as well as land ownerships, in that some of that land may be managed by federal agencies, some of that may be owned by private interests, and so you have different management objectives for different parcels of that area within the entire range of sage grouse. And so you may focus on one area to do your management or treatment or to conserve sagebrush. The reality may be that the part that's affecting the population is maybe 50 miles away and having an entirely different set of circumstances.
So this is more of a research question, but how do you go about finding these shrubland birds in such a vast and in a lot of ways harsh landscape?
Most of the surveys for birds are focused on the breeding period. And during that time, then males are attracting females and the singing, and so you hear the songs. And most of the surveys are based on how many of these songs you detect in a given area. For sage grouse do this elaborate display in the spring on a small breeding area called a lek. And so the males get out and they strut and they make popping noises and inflate these airbags, and it's really quite a dramatic display. And for many, these leks are traditional in that birds will show up at these same locations, you know, over literally centuries.
So you know where to show up, basically.
The biologists know where to show up to count the sage grouse. And so they'll do this display, and then it's through these counts that we get an idea of population trend as well as number of birds in different areas.
So are these shrubland bird species, are they intricately tied to the landscape? And if so, what changes can have the biggest effect on the sage bird populations?
Many of these species are dependent on sagebrush itself, the plant, either for nesting cover. For sage grouse, they depend on sagebrush for much of their food requirements. And in the wintertime, sagebrush leaves can actually form almost 100% of their diet. So they're totally dependent on sagebrush, the plant.
So why has the sage grouse received so much attention recently?
It's important right now because of its representation of what's happening in the sagebrush system. As such, it would be an icon for sagebrush systems throughout the western United States. Losses of sage grouse populations reflect the changes that are happening within the sagebrush ecosystem. And so they're sort of the canary in the coal mine in terms of telling us what's happening within the system.
Well, it sounds like you have your work cut out for you.
I think I and many other people do.
Great. Well, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome.
That's all the time we have for today's episode. Make sure to check out our transcripts for links to more information on the research going on at USGS FRESC. For those who subscribe through iTunes, you can access the transcripts at our website, or.usgs.gov/podcast. If you have any questions or comments about the USGS Oregon Science Podcast, email us at oregonpodcast@usgs.gov. As always, thank you all for listening. If you want to hear more about other research the USGS is doing around the country, please check out the other USGS podcasts at usgs.gov/podcasts. Until next time, I'm Damon Runberg. This podcast is a product of the U.S. Geological Survey, Department of the Interior.